Hey everyone, welcome back to Why the Flick, a podcast where we watch a new movie each episode and ask ourselves, why the flick did we watch this? I'm your host, Claire, and this week I am very excited to be joined once again by Frankie and Scott from Shoot the Flick. Hey guys!
Woo!
Hey!
We're back again. Last season we did Palm Springs together. That was a hoot and a holler.
That was fun.
It was.
It was. And I was just recently on your podcast and we covered the Grand Budapest Hotel. So that was fun as well.
That should be coming out very soon. So I think both of these episodes are coming out right around the same time. So
yeah. Yeah, I think so. But you guys are really expanding my Wes Anderson filmography single-handedly, I'd say.
We aim to please.
Yeah. I hope this one expanded your mind a little bit. Because we were watching it last night, and Scott said, is this the oldest movie she's done on her show? I'm like, I don't know. I think so, right? Because I know you did Jaws.
But yeah.
This is older than Jaws.
I was talking about it at the end of the last episode I recorded. I was like, I'm pretty sure this is the oldest one that we did, because Halloween was, what, 1978?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then Jaws was, what?
75?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 72. Well,
we're setting records here. We're setting records. I
mean, we're all about that over here at Shoot the Flick, so.
Absolutely. And it's like fitting because, as I mentioned last episode, we're finally in April, and April means we are doing a themed month. And the theme is Mother Nature is a Motherfucker Month.
And I love
boy,
that.
She is.
I love that.
Yeah, so as the first movie to kick us off, I think this is perfect. It is The Poseidon Adventure, released in 1972, directed by Ronald Neame, and based on Paul Gallico's 1969 novel. So really might be like one of the first, at least like the first successful disaster movie for sure.
Yeah, because disaster movies in general have been like a trend, I would say, in cinema. In the 70s, it had a big run. And then in, like, the 90s, 2000s, it had a big run. But, yeah, in the 70s, it was super sick. This is, like, an Oscar-winning movie. So now you look at disaster movies, and they're all just, like, blown off as, like, stupid, mindless, like, blockbusters. But this one's got Oscars under its belt.
Well, yeah, because movies nowadays, especially disaster movies, all have the same CGI, like, oh, I'm supposed to believe this asteroid is coming to Earth. I feel like they're all asteroids now. That's all it is now.
I think they're all asteroids.
They're either asteroids or earthquakes.
This year, Scott.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not all asteroids. Unless there's an asteroid in the Twister. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, obviously. But
I'm not
knows?
Going to.
Who knows?
Yeah, I was super surprised to learn that this was nominated for like 8 Academy Awards, and people were absolutely loving this.
Yeah, this is the reason, if I don't want to jump ahead of your thing, but like the reason I suggested to do this movie was because like this is one of the first like grown-up movies I watched as a kid that my parents showed me, and I felt like such an adult watching this movie. I was like, ooh, this is a real movie. People are dying and shit. But like I loved this movie growing up, and I've seen it now multiple times. We watched it again last night, and it, spoiler alert, it made me cry again. Every time I watch this movie, it makes me cry. So yeah, it's definitely top tier stuff, and I feel like no one talks about it, which is crazy.
Yeah Well, I'll circle back and give a description of the movie in case anyone has never seen The Poseidon Adventure or the remake from 2006, which I have thoughts to share about that one.
Yeah, I've never seen that, so I'm interested to see what you think.
Or the sequel with Michael Caine.
No, that's not a sequel. I thought you said remake. That's a sequel. Yeah, there's a sequel to this, which is bad. It's fine, don't worry about it.
Yeah But the IMDb description for this movie says, a group of passengers must embark on a harrowing struggle for survival after a rogue wave capsizes their cruise ship at sea. So this is the first time I've ever seen this movie. I've seen it now 3 times, and I also cried the third. Finally, I cried on the third watch. I was like, I'm really, really drawn to these characters, and we'll talk about it once we get to that part. But I'd only ever seen the one from 2006. So in terms of like, why the flick did I pick this movie? I figured I should probably see the original because that's, I'm sure, superior to the 2006 one. Though I will say both this one and the 2006 one have incredible casts. Like the 2006 one has Kurt Russell and Emmy Rossum, Josh Lucas, Richard Dreyfuss, Fergie. So like cast alone, I think I might go back and rewatch it.
Fergie, like Black Eyed Peas Fergie?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so insane. I was like, I said, you said Fergie. I'm like, wait, who?
Yeah.
What do you I'm mean? Like,
I need to like now, I feel like I had a fever dream about this, but I was going through the cast list and it says Fergie on here. So Fergie was Fergalicious in the Poseidon.
Oh my God. That's wild. All right.
It's almost like Rihanna in Battleship.
Yeah. Like, why are you doing this? And they're both movies. That's weird. That's a weird coincidence.
There's something there. Singers are drawn to movies about boats.
I guess. Things right?
happening with boats.
Strange.
But I will say the one from 2006, I was kind of hesitant to watch this one from 1972 because the one from 2006 has a super disturbing death scene where someone violently drowns on screen, like you see them drown. And it really affected me deeply. And I feel like I have some repressed trauma around that. So it was really actually brave of me to pick this one because I was like, I feel like I ought to see the original and take that chance. But this one's rated PG, so I figured it couldn't be too bad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, back in the 70s, the rating system was probably a little skewed. It probably would have got a PG-13 today. But, I mean, yeah, it's emotionally fucked because there are deaths and there are many. But it's not bad. It's as far as rating, I guess.
Oh yeah, well when we first reviewed it on our show back in the day,
2 years ago, back in the day.
but we reviewed it. Yeah, there's nothing about this that is like overly graphic.
No.
Like we were talking about how like nowadays like Michael Myers snaps a kid's neck on screen, and you're like, oh okay, and
yeah, you're desensitized to a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like there were only a few deaths in this one where I was kind of more so like confused. Like, I don't understand how this equated to you dying, but sure, we'll just like go with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was nothing like super violent on screen. It was nothing gratuitous.
No.
So I think it made it easier for me to watch. But I'll say, like, I had a fucking fun time watching this movie. Like, I had a blast for the most part. I'd say, like, there's some things I had issues with the movie, but for the most part, I was like, this is fun. Like, I'm so excited by, obviously, like, I knew the story going in since I'd seen the remake, but this one definitely takes a few different turns, but it's fun to get to watch them, like, navigate these corridors. Also, very, drowning's, like, one of my biggest fears, so, like, when the water's rushing toward them, I got very anxious at certain parts, I'll say. But yeah, it was fun. And I was originally thinking like, Poseidon Adventure. Adventure doesn't seem like a suitable word, but maybe it is because I had a fun time.
Yeah, I mean, this movie has a lot of like disaster movie tropes, both good and bad. You know, there's like the, you know, annoying kid characters that are just there to be, you know, liabilities. There's also the basket case character that basically has to be like babied through the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's like you were saying, like the stacked cast, the ensemble. That's a big trope of disaster movies. And like the thing about this one, I feel like that kind of sets it apart is there are characters in it that are very much like not really characterized and just there to be like plot devices for one thing or another. But then there are other characters that are pretty well characterized and you instantly like fall in love with and you just don't want anything to happen to them.
Yeah.
So when things inevitably do happen to them, you know, cry. Like, yeah. I do every time.
Well, that's the thing about disaster movies nowadays. I feel like we get the star-studded cast now, like where we get all these big name stars, but you don't really care about the characters. Right. You're like, oh, they died. Okay,
it's like cool. A horror movie almost. We're like, oh, we're setting these paper tigers up to just fall and get murdered, and then the movie's over. But this one is a little different in that way. At least it's just good.
Yeah, I feel like when you watch a disaster film, you can pretty much tell like who's gonna die. Like the asshole is usually the first to go. Mm-hmm. Like there's usually a scared woman who dies unexpectedly. But this one was for sure like different. Like I had only one guess about who was gonna die, and then he did die. So that was really all I had. But also, people don't talk about how this is a New Year's Eve movie, and this should actually be the movie everyone watches to rein in the new year.
New Year's, yeah. It was funny, because when we did it on our show, I had forgotten beforehand that it was a New Year's Eve movie, and we watched it. I'm like, oh, how did I forget? In the opening, like the big first action sequence, I guess is what you can call it, there's a freaking Christmas tree in the room. Like, obviously, like it's a huge set piece, the Christmas tree. Like, I don't know how I forgot, but... You can watch this any time of year and get the warm and fuzzies.
Yeah.
We were also joking last night that this is probably a top three Auld Lang Syne scene movie.
Oh, yeah. We were thinking about all the movies that use Auld Lang Syne. And we're like, it's this? It's A Wonderful Life?
And When Harry Met Sally.
And When Harry Met Sally.
Those are top tier
Auld Lang Syne scenes in movies.
Yeah, I concur. I was like, yeah, I mean, people talk about like When Harry Met Sally or that like other New Year's Eve rom-com movie, but nobody ever talks about Poseidon Adventure, and I feel like this is like the OG. Yeah.
It is fun. I would say though, because like I'm not like personally the biggest 70s movie person. I'd say of all like the eras of movies, that's probably like one of the ones anyway that I'm like least familiar with. So I would say to people that aren't like super into 70s movies generally and don't know a lot of them, like this is a good one to watch because it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah,
a lot. It's engaging.
Yeah, definitely.
Although it is, and like, very 70s. It's like, yeah, the outfits, the hairdos, it's like a lot, but
it's super 70s even in the way that it's filmed, but it's still like really fun to watch, and I almost kind of like forget it's in the 70s when I'm watching it.
Yeah, it really holds
up.
It's
so good.
Which is good.
It does. It really does. And I think that's like in credit to all of the like practical effects that they use. So like everything feels very authentic and real versus like nowadays, like you said, with disaster films, they would just throw in CGI with the water scenes especially. But yeah, like,
because when did the remake came out? What, 2006 you said?
Yeah,
so I'm sure there was a good amount of shitty CGI.
Yeah, I think the whole, like, the Rogue Wave was essentially CGI. Which, like, fine. I mean, you have the technology to do it, but you could also just make a giant wave look really big, depending on the camera
angle.
That's
the thing. Like, at the time, in 2006 or whatever, like, you know, CGI was, like, the hot new thing, and, like, everyone was using it, but it doesn't really have a timeless quality to it. This does. This is, like... Yeah. 40 something years old and you still buy into it. Is it 50 something years old. I can do math, but yeah, no, it's definitely still timeless, I would say.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of like, we mentioned the disaster film genre, it like, I was reading up on how it really like literally turned the genre upside down. And also related to Christmas, it was released on December 13th, and it became like a Christmas blockbuster. So sweet. Such really puts me in the Christmassy mood, I'll say. And it was the second most successful film that year, behind only The Godfather.
Right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny because Scott has this thing on his letterbox where he rates movies like by year, and he was going through it. He's like, oh, this is my second favorite movie of 1972. I'm like, behind what? And I'm like, oh, The Godfather, right? Like, obviously, because you can't fuck with The Godfather. But this is right up there.
Well, yeah, again, that's not like a slight. It's the
Godfather. No, I mean, it's The Godfather.
And honestly, if the Poseidon Adventure had come out maybe a few months earlier, it could have surpassed it because, you know, you're at December 13th. You've only got, like, what, 3 weeks of the rest of the year to make up for it. So
that's true.
Really, time was on Godfather's side.
Mm, yeah.
But yeah, like, I think after this movie came out, executives were like, we have to make more of these disaster movies because this like raked in the cash at the time. It made $93 million at the box office, which in today's standards I read was more than $600 million. So quite a lot of cash there. And then
this was one of the ones that really kicked off the trend in the 70s. It was this one and I think Towering Inferno, which had Paul Newman, which I also saw, and that one's good too. And then there's like a shit ton. There's like one with, there's an earthquake one, I think, with Charlton Heston. There's like literally one with Michael Caine where it's just bees. Like
bees?
Literally bees.
Bees. Not the bees.
Put in that clip from Arrested Development. Bees? Bees. Literal bees just swarming everywhere.
Oh, you went that way. I went,
You went Nick Cage. Nick Cage, of course, obviously.
Oh,
but
classic. Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many. And then, of course, you know, once it gets tired, then, you know, they move on to something else. And then that kind of happened again in the 90s and 2000s.
Mm. Yeah.
And then it went away. And who knows?
It never went away.
Maybe Twisters will bring it back.
No.
No. Maybe Twisters will bring back the disaster movie, man.
I have little hope of that.
I have no faith, but
stranger things have happened.
Claire, have you seen the trailer to Twisters?
Yeah, I have seen the trailer to Twisters. I still am not sure if it's a remake
it's
or
crazy.
A sequel.
It looks so bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like waiting for somebody to pop up. Obviously, unfortunately, Bill Paxton can't. But I was waiting for like, who's Helen Hunt was in it, right?
Helen Hunt.
Yeah, Helen Hunt's got to pop up somewhere in that.
Yeah.
They're keeping her to like the end.
maybe. Yeah, I'm still I will pay money to see that movie, but I don't have high expectations about
what we saw the trailer
be.
When we went to go see Dune 2. We were like, oh my god, this looks insane, like terrible. Like, this looks so crazy.
Yeah.
They don't have a cow in the damn Twister.
There's gonna be a cow in
the
Twister.
Well, it wasn't in the trailer. I thought they would have put that in the trailer. Like, look, it's like the other one. See, there's a cow.
Yeah, same cow.
It's the same cow.
I'm going to call it now. There's going to be a cow lifted up by one twister, shot out into the other twister, and then shot into a third twister.
Scott, this isn't Sharknado, okay? This is not that bad.
Oh, Lord.
When you asked for suggestions, by the way, I was like, should I put Sharknado just to be an asshole?
Oh my
and then
God.
I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to watch that again.
No, I'm glad you picked this one, and I feel like it's the perfect one to kick off our themed month, like I said, because it is like, it's like the mother of all disaster films.
Yes, she is mother.
The rest.
That's true.
She is mother.
She is mother.
So yeah, let's talk about the movie itself, starting with these opening credits. And I don't know about you guys, but the first thing I thought of when I saw these opening credits rolling and this like ship going up and down these waves was Deep Sea TikTok. Did you guys catch? Did you guys like think of that too, or is it just me?
Yeah,
because I just
a
was like,
bit, but then at a certain point where like when like the credits were going over the screen, it almost gave me like Gilligan's Island, like Love Boat. I'm like, someone put a theme in here. It's so 70s. We need it.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been going down deep sea TikTok rabbit holes lately, and so as soon as I saw the big waves and the ship going up and down, I was just like, "Yo ho!" And like that like audio tune really stood. Really, like, she is mother. She. I think she also inspired deep sea TikTok.
It is funny because since we watched the movie last night, I've gotten. When you scroll through like Facebook reels, I've gotten that guy who does sea shanties. I've gotten like 10 of his videos.
Like literally, Big Brother is listening.
The sea
Big
is
Brother
a scary
is listening
fucking place.
He's giving us sea shanties.
Sea shanties.
lot. Oh my god.
But yeah, I think this like first 15-20 minutes of the movie does a really good job of like setting up all of our main characters of who we are going to follow. And my first note was Leslie Nielsen. I love that he's in this as
Leslie
the captain.
Nielsen.
It's so weird, like, seeing him in a serious role.
Well, that's what most of his career was before Naked Gun happened.
But like,
and like Airplane.
When you get introduced, because again, wasn't around in the 70s, so my first introduction to him was Naked Gun.
Right, yeah.
So it's like, oh, you got the Naked Gun series, you got what he became as a comedic actor, and then you're like, you're here?
Even in this, though, he has like a couple of comedic moments. Like at one point, somebody's yelling at Leslie over the phone, and he's like, the guy's yelling at the boss of the ship, basically, and he gives the guy the phone. He's like, oh, I think it's for you.
Yeah. You're here. Yeah, I think my first Leslie Nielsen movie was Scary Movie 3, which
probably me too, actually. Yeah, I think so, because I never got into Airplane and stuff until like later in life, so I feel like, yeah.
So I was very accurate. Much like, oh, he's like trying to be for real here, like there's no, he's no joke
actor.
He's real. Yeah. But he was also like a silver fox, like he looked so good for his age. I don't know how old he was.
He was the president in Scary Movie 3, right?
Yep.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I'd vote for him.
Me.
Also, instantly recognized Roddy McDowall as Akers. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, another classic actor who I love, because I only watched...
Don't get too attached.
Yeah, right. I know. I only watched Fright Night for the first time last year, and I was like, oh my god, I love Roddy McDowall in that, and that's... I was so happy to see him in this for a short time.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. So cheesy, but so good.
But yeah, then we have Rogo and Linda, who have a very, like... interesting relationship and interesting marriage, I'll say. He's a detective lieutenant. She is a former sex worker, and they are a match made in heaven.
When we were like establishing their relationship in the scene, where like they're like in the room, they're talking about basically how they got together. Like, I got you off the street. Da, da, da. And Scotty and I are like, we want to know more about this. Like, can we get a prequel with just like their relationship and how they got together? You arrested me 6 times. I had to get you off the street. It's very like interesting.
I feel like that could be an interesting rom-com.
Yeah. Oh, ooh. Yeah. Sure. Barrel laughs. Freaking yeah. Borg 9.
Oh my god.
Chasing after this poor sex worker.
I really liked their. Like, I think they were a bit annoying at first, but then they kind of grew on me with their banter back
their
and
bickering
forth.
Bickering and stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, when she's like in the bathroom and he's yelling at her from outside, and she's like, you don't have to shout. And then he says it quietly, and she goes, I heard you.
Well, I think their relationship is so interesting because he's clearly a guy who's always in charge. Like, he's always in charge, and she's the only one who can, like, be like, no, go do this. And he's like,
yeah,
fine.
Okay. Yeah, she really puts him in line for the most part. But yeah, I love that, you know, she's so worried about a former client even, like, seeing her on the ship, and he's like... She's like, doesn't that bother you? And he goes, if it bothered me, I wouldn't have married you.
I was like,
this is really sweet. I know, he's very
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, very supportive of sex work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Until he took her off the streets. So, maybe not after that.
Yeah. But they, because in the book, because I did read the book before we did it on our show, and from what I remember, That exists in the book, but then they never say outright who the person is that recognized her, but Ernest Borgnine's character, Rogo, is suspicious that it's Gene Hackman's character, who I'm sure we're going to get to, because him and Linda are very flirty.
And yeah.
It's kind of in the movie a little bit. I think it's more so in the book, but it definitely exists in the movie a little bit, but it's a little more subtle.
I could I got vibes where I was like, I feel like there's something happening amongst these three, like with Linda, especially, and Reverend Scott, where I was like, because he was like holding on to her at certain points where I was like, and then she did give him a kiss on the mouth for, everybody kisses each other on the mouth.
Everyone's kissing each other on the mouth in the 70s. Like, no, reckless abandon. Like, I don't know you. Happy New Year. Mwah. It's whoa. Excuse me. Whoa. I don't know you, sir.
The seed does things to people.
What happens in open water stays in open water.
Yeah.
God.
But I again, we really like the Rogus. We would want more of the Rogus.
Rogos. Rogus. Soon it's going to turn into Ragu, and it's not, or not even kind of, no.
But the one, the group I want to get into really quick is, how do you let, again, your 8-year-old and your 12-year-old, or whatever, be on a ship
she's
alone?
She's not 12, she's like 16.
For a, whatever, 16-year-old, be alone on a ship for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about the kids. So there's Robin, who's like the little kid who his only purpose is to tell us things about the ship, like useless facts about the ship. And then the girl who's 16, I can't remember her name, Susan. And she is, her purpose is to be screaming girl with short shorts on and high heels and and to be Twitter padded with Gene Hackman the whole time, who is like in his 40s and she's 16.
Yeah,
and that's the tea. But in the book their parents are there, but in the, what I appreciate they did in the book making it into a movie is that there are even more characters in the book than there are in this movie, so they definitely condensed and like took certain characteristics from certain people and put them into other, they just condensed it because it's just way too much. Like, I would say the movie is better than the book, and that's kind of rare. But yeah, like there's just so many people, and they did a good job at condensing it and making it a tight script with everybody. Like, I never got confused as to who's who and who's doing what. Like, we did good in there with that. So
yeah, I agree.
Why are you not with your kids? You're away for a month on vacation, and your kids are on a boat in the ocean.
Traveling,
like, I don't understand,
yeah,
but whatever.
Very strange. Like, and Susan's like not a great like guardian over Robin. Like, she loses
him
constantly
half the time. By himself, just wandering around.
Yeah, but she's really keen on having him go to church. She's like, you can't go to the boiler room or whatever. You have to go to church. And then I did love his little moment where he tells her to shove it, and I audibly
shove
gasped.
It, shove it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, you're in trouble now. And then she says, don't say that to me again. And he literally says, shove it, shove it, shove it, which I was the only moment I really liked Robin. Every other moment I was like, you're really annoying me.
Yeah, I mean, he's just there to be annoying kid character. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, in the book, he does die.
A fun fact.
Not so fun fact. He does, like, literally, and he's... Even the death is just a plot device. Like, he's so pointless. And like, he goes away, ironically, to go to the bathroom, which is funny because in the book, at one point, in the movie, at one point, he separates himself and he ends up in the bathroom of the ship. And they're like, ah, I know what this is a reference to. But yeah, he just goes to like take a leak and then never comes back. And then the area gets flooded. So like, oh, I guess he drowned. Like, they never find his body.
Wow.
And the whole purpose of it in the book is because the mom is there and she just completely loses it and like loses her mind, and they gotta like keep her together. It's like, it's just, but yeah, no, in the movie his purpose is to be annoying. I guess they couldn't pull the trigger on killing a kid in 1972.
Yeah, that seemed too far for them at the time.
A little much.
Yeah,
I wanted him to die.
You were so annoyed by him.
You were just like waiting to say that. I could tell you just were dying.
Wanted him to die.
To let that out. So you speak your truth.
He was the worst.
Well, I kept, the first time we watched it, I was so adamant that I wanted him to die. We actually re-listened to our episode. I was so adamant. I'm like, I want this kid to die. I'm like, maybe I'll watch it again this time and I'll feel differently.
Maybe I'll soften
to Robin. I'll soften to Robin. And no, Not even a little bit.
Because he has that, like, good old boy voice he's putting on, too. Like, oh, excuse me, sir. I'll have you know that the hall is an inch thinner than the in this area. Right. And it's like, oh, my God, please stop speaking. Just stop it.
I mean, I get it. He's very helpful. And without him, like, they probably all would have died. But also, please be quiet and stop talking.
Like, poor Ornish Borgnine, every 5 minutes, every time he talks, he's just like, shut up, kid.
I know.
Me. Like, be quiet.
But he's just like, oh, he's just like the girl in Jurassic Park. I can hack things.
I can hack the ship.
Little kids who end up being useful. That's another, like, disaster movie trope.
Yeah.
Well, we should talk about Gene Hackman, because I feel like he is the star of the movie, which is surprising because apparently he only took this as a money job. Like, he didn't even care really, I think, about the role, but he put his whole self into he was like, if it's gonna be a money job, I'm gonna act my ass off. So good for him.
I was gonna say, because he doesn't act like it. He doesn't act like this is just a whatever job. He really puts it all into it, because he has a lot of speeches in this movie. He's the reverend who's like struggling with his faith. And his whole, like, thesis of the movie is, like, you don't need to rely on God to do things and help you. You can help yourself.
Yeah.
So throughout the whole movie, you know, his mission is to, like, get these people out of this terrible disaster and, like, get these people saved. And he's like, I don't need that stinking God. So, yeah, he has a lot of good speeches, a lot of good rousing, come on, guys, let's do this stuff, you know?
It's for sure. Good.
And then he yells at God at the end, and that's good, too.
as we all might do in our lives. I mean,
sometimes you're frustrated, and you just gotta yell at nothing. Yeah. It's okay.
But I love that he's, like, he's not a regular reverend. He's a cool reverend. Like, he's, like, praying garbage. Get off your knees and be realistic, folks. Like, and you know... Yeah, as you mentioned, he's like, don't pray to God, like, have the guts to do it yourself and fight for yourself. And if you fight for yourself and for others, then God will love that you tried. God loves a trier. If you know, God loves winners first and foremost, but if you try, he loves that too. So, you know, do what you can. So yeah, I liked that. It seemed also very like, what's the word I'm looking for? Not like new, but like revolutionary at the time. Yeah.
He's, you know, like you said, he's the cool reverend.
He's a cool reverend. Yeah, I'd go to church.
But he's clearly been through some shit, and he's like, you know, he's struggling to believe anymore. Because literally, he's having a conversation with this other, like, priest that's on the ship, and he never says he's a reverend at first, so you just think he's some, like, asshole that's, like, arguing with this priest about God, and then all of a sudden the guy goes, yeah, well, that's an interesting take for you to have, reverend, and it's like, oh, okay. Interesting.
We can tell, even, like, in how he dresses, like, the other reverend is, like, classic reverend, right, mm-hmm. where he's got, like, the collar. But since Reverend Scott's our cool reverend, he's got a turtleneck on. So that's
he's got that tight turtleneck and the blazer, that like wafty 70s hair that we aren't 100% sure isn't a hairpiece, but it's okay. Gene, you're looking good.
Yeah. You're doing your best, man. That's all you can ask for. And I do really want to quickly just mention Manny and Belle, because I was like, Grandpa Joe
so
from... Grandpa Joe from
Don't
Willy
get
Wonka
Scott
and
started.
The Chocolate
Grandpa
Factory.
Joe from Willy Wonka.
I love that he was in this.
They're so fucking cute together. It's disgusting, quite frankly. They're just
I know
so
they are goals. They are goals.
I love them so much. And then Shelley Winters is Belle, and she's just lovely.
Oh, the
best. I think she was only 50 when they made this movie, but they clearly. They like spray painted her hair gray. They're like, you got to play older, honey. You're somebody's grandma. Like, she's like, okay.
She's down.
But yeah, she was so good. And did she win an Oscar for this? I think she was nominated for an Oscar.
She was nominated, which I was like, hell yeah, she should be
nominated.
Unsurprising
because she's awesome in this.
Yeah.
she brought it up before, but we kept making Willy Wonka jokes throughout this entire movie.
Because he hates Grandpa Joe.
I really do not like Grandpa Joe.
He's one of those that thinks Grandpa Joe's the villain of Willy Wonka.
He is.
So we were entertained last night by Willy Wonka jokes throughout. Even though, like, it's so bad because their relationship is the most, like, heartwarming and heartbreaking of the movie. So it's like, I'm crying, mind you. I'm, like, sobbing, and he's making fucking... I'm like, can you shut up over there?
Yeah.
I'm trying to have a moment.
Be sensitive. Jeez. We're having a moment here.
Meanwhile, I've seen this movie a bajillion times. Like, I know what's happening anyway, but it's still... I need a moment.
But they really care about red buttons, though, I have to admit.
We have to talk about red buttons.
Oh, is that Martin?
Mr. Martin.
Martin. He was so sweet. I loved him a lot, too. Like, and so, again, revolutionary. A man who, like, is sensitive and, like...
Takes vitamins and shit.
Takes vitamins. I know. He's just his little
pills.
Like,
I'm just a haberdasher, and I'm trying to find the right woman, but there's just not enough hours in the day.
Because you take all these vitamins. You can't meet a woman while you take all these vitamins.
Oh, God. I love how, you know, you're right, Claire. It's a friggin' rom-com. This backdrop of a tsunami, disaster-ridden ship. Is actually a rom-com between Red Buttons and the blonde girl from this movie. I can't remember the actress's name.
Okay, Nani, but I did not believe that they had any chemistry.
They have no actual chemistry. She's just a hot mess that he has to take care of the whole time.
Right.
But it's fine. It's
poor
fine.
Brother died. But, like, yeah, I feel like Martin and Nani are just more like BFFs, but
they're
not.
They're buddies, yeah.
Yeah,
they're
not buddies. Romantically I think involved.
Mr. Martin was supposed to originally be played by Gene Wilder. He had to turn it down. But I feel like Gene Wilder has a little more brizz, so I feel like if he was in it, maybe there would have been a little more something-something.
And then
but
we would have had Grandpa Joe and Willy Wonka.
And Willy Wonka, yeah. That would have been funny. I said that, too.
Oh, man.
I was like,
I did really like. I did really like the actor who played Martin, but now I'm kind of obsessed with it being
Gene Wilder. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, stacked. Yeah. So really great cast all around up until, you know, this ship gets struck, which I was kind of thinking to myself, is this why I have never gone on a cruise ship? Like, subconsciously, have I never gone because I'm afraid this might happen
the tsunami.
In real life? Might get capsized.
And it all happens because of capitalism, mind you, because apparently the owner of the ship, his representative on the boat, is like, we are already 3 days behind schedule. It's costing us thousands of dollars. We need to get our ass into... And fucking Leslie Nielsen is like, do you not see the rain? There's storms and shit. Like, we gotta just not do that. No. And he's like, you better do it or I'll get someone else who will. And it's like, okay, fine, go ahead. And then... Something tells me whoever owns that ship is gonna cost them a lot more money now to set the six survivors up for life.
Yeah, and all the wrongful death, death lawsuits that they're
they're done
they're
pretty much. Whoever owns this thing.
Yeah, but I think they do a really good job of like foreshadowing what's about to happen because, like you mentioned, the ship is really top heavy and neat. He says, we need to take on more ballast, and I don't know what that means,
I
had to Google it. It's basically like a dense material used as a weight to provide stability. So I was like, okay, sure, whatever. And then also the fact that the ship is old. Like, she is mother, but she do be old. Like,
she's grandmother. She is about to get put to bed when this voyage is over.
This ship is literally falling to pieces. I don't even understand why it is still... operational at this point. I mean, I don't think it would have helped either way because a rogue wave is going to knock over anything in its path, but she's already like on the struggle bus and now
she's going to get overturned. On the struggle bus. And it's like, that's what makes me laugh too, because when the disaster itself does occur and the boat literally tips over, like everyone's in the like ballroom essentially because it's the big New Year's Eve party or whatever, and the one guy that works on the ship, he's like, everyone just stay here, everything is fine, don't worry, the ship is sealed, we're good. And it's like, dude, the ship is 1,000 years old. How do you know? Like, how do you know? And they're all like so mad because Gene Hackman gets, you know, the band of ragtag people here. Yeah, to escape, essentially, to try to get help. And they're all like so mad at Gene Hackman, like, what's wrong with you? Mind your own business. You're going to get us all killed. And it's like, what? How do you know staying here is not going to get you killed as opposed to going up there? What? Like, why are you so mad? Calm down.
Don't you think like the pressure of water surrounding you is going to cave in eventually? Which
and he says
alert,
that Gene Hackman
does.
Literally says that. He's like standing on his perch and he's like, I implore you one last time, the water pressure is literally caving in and dragging us deeper into the water. Like, this isn't good. We should go up.
Well, yeah, also, like, if someone's trying to save us, it's gonna be a lot harder for them to get all the way down here than to get up top where we would need to go.
I don't know. Yeah. It must be like a hive mind thing, because once the
guy
says it, everyone, a lot of people anyway, are like, no, I'm just going to stay here. If it was, I mean, I would hope, you know, you never know unless you're in a situation like that. But I feel like I would feel a lot more comfortable doing something as opposed to just sitting there and waiting. You know what I mean?
Well, I also think it's because it's coming from whoever this guy is. I think he's like,
he's
first
the purser. Which I don't know what that is, but he,
I had no idea.
There's literally a scene earlier where he says, like, the real person that runs the ship isn't the captain, it's the purser. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, who the fuck is a, what is a purser? I don't know what that means.
But he either way, he's a high ranking official
on
the
ship. He's somebody on the ship.
So it's like, oh, okay, I'll trust him over random priest
who's yelling at me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's like people are more inclined to believe someone who is like an authorized representative of the ship versus good old Reverend Scott. But let's like use our brains, people, and let's be logical. I mean, realistically, like they not all of them would have gotten up that Christmas tree before the water came bursting in, but they were all being pretty
stupid. Right. We could have got a few more though.
Yeah, you could have. But I think we going back to like focusing like on our little group of survivors, like that felt like a good amount of people to like for me to like keep up with and remember who's who.
It felt like a manageable amount of people.
Yeah. But can we just talk about, in terms of disaster, how fucking terrifying is a rogue wave, people?
Oh,
Jesus. I mean, just the scene where, like, the boat is tipping over and everyone's slowly, like, you know, tumbling and falling and shit's falling on them. And it's, like, it's really scary.
Like, it is.
Watch it now, like, however many years later, and you're like, okay, this is still really good and well done, first of all. Second of all, you're still looking at it like you're on the edge of your seat, like, oh my god, oh god, and everyone's like, it's like fucking scary to look at and watch.
So while we were watching the boat tipping over, we kept going, okay, that person's definitely dead.
Yeah,
that person's probably dead. That one might just be concussed.
People were getting, one guy I think got smashed by a piano, like, and I was like, well, he got cut in half. I feel like they didn't show it, but I think that's what happened.
Yeah, Scott's like, oh no, he's fine. He's just going to pop up with some piano keys in his mouth like a cartoon. Like, it's going to be fine. He's good. Walk it off.
But yeah, I think like the way that they shot this was really cool. Like, I watched a whole YouTube video about like the production design behind this movie, and the way that they like filmed this scene was really cool, where they like shot the first part. So like the stage that they built it on tilted at a 45 degree angle at the most, and then they like cut, and then they turned it all the rest of the way upside down, and then like it's gnarly, like people were hanging off the tables. I was like, well, that's stupid, why did you hang on to the table?
Yeah, like
you're dead. And that one guy like crashes into the light and then gets electrocuted, and I was like, wow, double whammy there.
Ow The only one that, because Susan, the teenage girl, she manages to, like, stay perched on the table. And one thing I found was funny, like, watching it, that I never really, like, noticed before. Like, when they pull out a tablecloth, and I do like that they do that in this movie. They do it a lot of times where they take, like, random items throughout the ship and use it for other purposes to, like, help and do stuff. Like, the Christmas tree, for example, they take the huge Christmas tree to get everybody on the little on the level to escape the big ballroom, and this they use a tablecloth and like spread it out like so she can fall into it. And what I found really funny, she's sitting up there on the table perched up, and they're like, jump, jump. The brother is yelling in his, like, you know, like, he sounds like a kid from, like, a 50s cartoon. Like, come on, sis, come on. It's like, oh, yeah. My God, please stop. And then Gene Hackman is literally yelling at her, jump, just jump, jump, jump. And it's like, can you, if I were her, I'd be like, everyone stop yelling at me.
Right?
This is not helping. Just shut up. Someone else, count to three and I'll jump. Just shut up. Stop yelling.
I half expected the sheet to rip and her to go through it and die.
I heard it tear a little bit. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I would have been terrified. I'm not really afraid of heights, but falling is very scary.
That's like, you know, it's a fucking tablecloth. Like, I don't know. Like, that's
this isn't a trampoline, guys. Like, this is just a fucking sheet. Like, anything can happen.
I don't know about that. Movie magic, you know?
True. But yeah, I was like reading through IMDb trivia, and one of the like facts that it had in there was that mid-ocean rogue waves were previously thought to occur only once every 10,000 years until recently, when people realized, oh, actually these can happen hundreds of times every decade, folks. Like, this actually happens quite a lot. So I went down a whole rabbit hole about like rogue waves. And now I think I'm going to have nightmares for the rest of my life.
Never again go on a boat. It's too dangerous
out
there.
Just shell out a little extra money to get on a plane and, you know, fly to Italy.
Well, that's the thing, too, because Rogo, Ernest Borgnine, says at one point, like, because him and Linda are on this voyage to go to Italy and, like, go on their honeymoon, essentially, a late honeymoon. And Linda says, why we didn't take a plane, I'll never know. And at the end of the movie, I'm like, aren't you kicking yourself? Like, I should have just bought a goddamn plane ticket.
I know.
None of this would have happened.
I know. It's rough. I mean, yeah. And like this one, so the movie poster says the wave was 90 feet. And like in real life, the largest like rogue wave has been 58 feet. So Jesus 90 Christ. Feet, folks. Woof.
Woof indeed.
Woof. But yeah.
God.
Yeah. So I mean, I think like the whole escape from the ballroom was really clever, like using the Christmas tree to climb up to get to the floor, because now the floor is the ceiling.
Yeah. And it's weird because everything's upside down, so it's weird.
Yeah.
Make it make sense. But yeah, they're even yelling at him when he's moving the Christmas tree. They're all yelling at him like, you're gonna get us killed. He's just moving the tree. Like, calm down.
I know.
Everyone relax.
Fuck off. Like, you can stay here and die, but we're like, gonna use the tree to live.
And then like, what's one of the craziest things in the movie is like, obviously the water pressure, because something explodes, because disaster movie, something explodes and the water pressure breaks the fucking glass window and everything starts flooding, and they're all up there and they all rush for the Christmas tree and knock it over, and then Gene Hackman has no other choice but to just leave and leave all these many people to scream and cry while they're obviously going to die. And it's incredibly difficult to hear just as an audience member, and then Gene Hackman just like it's like almost torturing him to just close the door, and he like turns to everyone else and he's like, all right, let's go. And then they leave. It's
gotta
like,
keep moving.
Fuck.
And that scene was like shot practically too, where like they had the explosion, like literally an explosion on set, and then the water came bursting through into the scene, and it was cool to like watch that play out like behind the scenes. But yeah, I mean, it's they're dead at that point. Really rough for them. I felt bad because he was like, Reverend Scott was really trying to help them climb up that Christmas tree, but mob mentality took over, and you know, they all fell to their deaths. But yeah, but then, you know, we've got our little handful of group. They're doing their best. They're trying to navigate. I feel like the escape part through each level was like cool to see, because first they have to like go through the kitchen, and then they are like, there's a potentially like flash fire that's in here. We don't know. Also, like all of the extras who were dead bodies throughout the entire movie,
oh
I felt
God,
like were great. Like in that kitchen alone, it's like all of these charred dead bodies everywhere, essentially, of people who were in the kitchen at the time. Real rough.
I do think my favorite dead body, though, of
what a sentence
is at one point Gene Hackman swimming underwater, and he pushes. He's like, just,
there's
just
like a floating like waiter or something. He's like, get out of the way.
Yeah, that was someone important. I heard that on IMDb trivia. I don't know who, but I don't know if it was the art director or the stunt coordinator, but that was someone important, and that was their little cameo.
You gotta like just pretend to be dead underwater.
No. My favorite dead body was the charred one that was like
oh, that was
wide-eyed.
Like frozen, and you could see his eyes bugging out.
Yeah,
and Susan
and
just
Gene
starts
Hackman
crying, like freaking
threw
out.
His jacket over the head.
Yeah, yeah. That's a lot.
But yeah, it's really, really rough. They're getting through all of these parts. They have to go upstairs with no steps, and they have to use a fire hose to pull people up.
Oh my god, that whole scene was fucking crazy.
As like water is rushing in at the very last second.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny at that point. Well, there's a couple of things that are funny. So at one point, they're pulling up Belle Rosen, who's Shelley Winters, who's a little not skinny. She's, you know, and the kid goes, "Don't worry, Mrs. Rosen. I helped my dad pull in a 600-pound swordfish one time." And I was like,
"No, you did not.
This kid needs to stop talking. I'm going to fucking punch him in the face." Like, they do this thing with Miss Rosen throughout the whole movie. Because there's another point, too, I think, where Linda just calls her a fat ass. And it's like,
yeah.
Can you fucking not? Like, why are you doing that? And, like, it's annoying. And I know why they do it. They do it and build her up like she's this useless, quote-unquote, character for what happens to her towards the end of the movie. And I got it. But it's like, don't be mean to Miss Shelley Winters. Because she has an Oscar nomination. And you fucking don't, Linda.
Yeah. Take that.
But also, it was funny when the water, when they're going up those stairs things on the fire hose, and the water rushes in, Nani just yells like fucking Jaws is chasing her. She's like, ah! And I'm like, honey, I understand, but like,
just
nothing's
take
coming
a breath.
To you right this
it's
second.
Okay.
Doesn't have teeth. Calm down.
There are so many times where we're like, Red Buttons, just leave her behind.
Just leave her ass. Like, she is a liability.
No, like, I feel bad for her. Her poor brother
I
died.
Do too,
she's
but
in
like,
trauma.
My God.
Yeah. I agree with you, though, about the bell of it all, because like this is where like things started to get problematic for me, where I was like, okay, I don't like all the fat shaming of Belle. Mm-mm. Like, let's not do that. And apparently Shelley Winters said that she gained 35 pounds specifically like for this role, so I'm like, additionally, yeah, like, let's not fat shame her. Yeah. for this,
because that was the character, someone's like portly old grandmother.
Yeah,
so that's the role, and it's, yeah, but like, it, I get it. I mean, she called, I think Mrs. Rosen calls herself fat at one point, because when they're going up the Christmas tree, Gene Hackman comes over to her, she's like, come on, and she's like, a fat woman like me is not getting up that tree. And he's like, no, you are a bitch, don't get up there.
Yeah, most of them were supportive. Like, Linda was kind of a bitch to her in that one moment, but yeah, I think like when she was about to say like, no, I'll stay behind, Manny, you go on, and Manny's like, I'm not leaving you, and then Reverend,
yeah, he's
Scott,
like, are you going somewhere I'm not going? Like, what are you talking about? Bye. No.
Of course. So I was really glad that they brought her along. I was like, please, for the love of God, make her go.
No,
up
it was
the Christmas tree.
I did find it funny when Gene Hackman like gives her the push up the tree, and she's like, oh!
Yeah, he like grabs her ass. He's like, sorry.
And
she's like, it's all right.
She's like, you did what you had to do.
And she got my ass grabbed by Gene Hackman.
She's
like,
it's
cool.
Mrs. Peter Pan, I am not.
Oh my God.
So good. But yeah, like, other like kind of problems I had was like, I don't think like, nothing was super gratuitous in terms of like, I feel like oftentimes with women in disaster movies, it's like, by the end of the movie, they're like in a bra and panties, you know, like everything's been like torn off of them. And I think there were a few shots of like camera angles with Linda, because essentially they're like, practically you cannot climb around in this tight skinny dress. You have to put on Rogo's shirt, which I'm like, okay, like, I think that's
fair.
Yeah,
at no point did they tell Shelley Winters to rip off her fucking skirt, but they purposely tell Susan to take her skirt off, and they tell Linda to take her skirt off. And there's a funny line where Linda's like, you know, oh, okay, I'll take it off. And Ernest Borgnine's like, she has nothing on under there. And she's like, well, I have panties on. What else do I need? He's yeah, like, what do you mean? What else do you need?
He says, next time, put something on. And I'm like, she's in a dress. What is she's supposed to wear?
A skin-tight dress. She didn't even have a bra. I'm like, what do you, I don't know. Yeah. Something tells me he wasn't complaining an hour ago when they were at the party.
True. True.
You know? So, yeah, it was just funny. But, like, there's one point where they go underwater. And I won't spoil the sequence yet because it's towards the end. But there's one point where they go underwater. And Linda, she's just wearing, like, a men's dress shirt. She's wearing her husband's dress shirt and underwear. And they show her going underwater. And she almost, like, pulls the shirt down to cover. Like, yeah. She's afraid it's going to go up and show her tatas. So it's just funny to watch her, like, twist around and try to cover herself. I'm like, well, oh, my God. Like, we couldn't really do another take of that.
Yeah, everyone, but hardly anybody else was really shown at that angle under the water. Like, they only showed her. No. There's also a scene where when she's climbing up the ladder where it's, like, basically, like, looking up at her butt. And I was like,
both her and Susan, because there's one point on that ladder, Susan goes over and you see just all ass and thigh. And it's like, girl. And they both of them have their fucking high heels on. It's a very Jurassic World situation. We're like, we couldn't.
Oh, yeah.
Put them in socks. Like, really? Like, we gotta have them wear the high heels. They can't climb in fucking skirts, but they can climb in high-ass heels.
High heels.
Okay. Sure. All
right. Right.
Sure.
If you can run away from a T-Rex in high heels, you can climb a ladder. It's
Shut
fine.
Up, Scott. Why don't you wear some high heels sometimes and tell me that?
Yeah, you put on a high heels and a dress, and then you tell us
I'd
how
rather
easy
climb
it is.
In a skirt than in high heels.
Yeah.
I'll take the heels off.
Right,
and I'll
exactly.
climb the skirt.
I'm joking.
I know. Relax. Right. I know.
Yeah. We're all just we're all kidding around over here.
Scott's like, I don't actually mean you can climb in high heels.
But yeah, this is the part where poor Eccles dies, and I felt really no. I mean, his knee looked real fucked up. So
it looked rough, man. Like, he wasn't gonna make it.
Bad. He was limping around. So I figured he was gonna be the first to go. Though I was kind of confused, like, what happened to him, because essentially, like, he's climbing up the ladder and then all of a sudden he's just like,
literally, because there was
backwards.
Some sort of explosion, something shook.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, like, the way they did it, like, it literally looked like they just told him, okay, now let go.
Yeah, like, just fell. Like, be frozen with your hands sticking out like
right.
this, and
was,
then fall backward. And then
it was filmed a little awkwardly.
Yeah, and then he falls in. I guess, like, the shaft blew up, and, like, when he once he fell in the water, maybe he blew to bits. I don't freaking know.
Because
Rosa
went after him, and then came back up, and it's like, he's gone. And fucking Gene Hackman was yelling at him, like, where were you? And it's like, I went in there.
Yeah,
what do you want
I
me
tried.
To do?
And also, you should have probably had Eccles be further up with the rest
if
you of you guys.
Him so bad.
If he was so important. So once again, really not prioritizing the service people in this movie.
Also, I didn't know what his accent was. That guy. I was like, what
Irish.
Is your accent, man?
Sounded Irish to me.
It did, but then I was like,
he
was
lost
like
it
Scottish?
A couple times.
Like, Scottish, I didn't know what was happening. I was like, okay, you go, sweetie.
He's from somewhere in the United
he's
Kingdom.
He's somewhere.
He's a world traveler.
Somewhere in Europe, yeah.
He has adopted every single accent to make it his
and
own.
And just compiled them all together.
Compiled them all.
Oh, man.
But yeah, like, I think another problematic thing for me was, like you just had mentioned earlier, between Reverend Scott and Susan, it's like, they're trying to make them romantically involved,
ew.
But she's like
literally.
The actress was literally 18 at the time, and Gene Hackman was 40. And I was like, there ain't no way, I'm not about this.
Yeah, because like in the book, I remember, kind of like I said before, he's flirting with Linda a little bit, but Susan has a little Twitter padded like teenage crush on Gene Hackman's character, which is fine. I mean, whatever, it happens. But yeah, there is one point in particular where Gene Hackman breaks off from the rest and he's like, I'm gonna go find the engine room and then see if it's safe, blah blah blah. And Susan follows him, and Susan's like, I feel safe with you. And it's like, ew, okay.
Yeah.
And then he at one point like, yeah, it's almost like they're trying to, like, feed into the fantasy a little bit, because at one point he goes up to her and, like, holds her and he grabs her face, and it's like, okay, a little too much, a little too close.
Don't stand.
Okay, don't no, stand. We're not doing that again. But yeah, it was a little weird. I was like, no, don't do that.
Hard pass. We could have done without that. At least He's they didn't 40. Like fucking make out on screen. That would have, I was, at least they spared us that.
No.
Well, part of me does think, though, that like Gene Hackman doesn't even like realize.
Yeah, I don't think he like gets it, like what's happening.
I think that like, that makes, like, okay, at least he's not, like, actively, like, oh, I see you as a potential romantic.
No, he sees
he's
her as
just
a little
kinda,
girl.
He sees her as a little girl, and he's just like,
yeah.
He doesn't think of her like that. He's like, she has a crush on him, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. She can have a crush on him, and as long as he doesn't, like, actively pursue it, okay, I'm fine. Whatever.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's funny.
I think it's just, like, a trope of, like, not just the 70s, but like of Hollywood in general, where they pair a very young woman with a very old man, and it's unfortunate, but at least they didn't like make it a thing too much, you know,
take it too far. They kind of flirted with the line a little bit, but
but this like part dragged on for me a little bit when they're like, let's like Reverend Scott and Rogu have just been at odds this entire time, and they just can't put aside their manly differences to work together.
Just like, I have a bigger penis. No, I have a bigger penis. It's like, shut up already.
Martin's like, you both have big penises.
Let's just fucking go.
We'd feel better if you quit yelling at each other.
Oh my god.
They just need to go make out. It's fine.
No. Well, that's okay.
I support this.
Jesus Christ. Oh my god.
That's so funny. But yeah, I think like this whole part where it's like, let's take 15 minutes. I'm like, we do not have time to kill guys. We just like, make a choice and stick with it. Like, so yeah, the meandering around, I feel like, was like, ugh, let's just like, let's keep it moving, guys.
They did
it
for a purpose. They did it for, you know, we needed our pairs to like have conversations. So Red Buttons has a conversation with Nani, and Rogo just sits there and stews. What am I talking about? The Rosens have a beautiful little conversation where she's like, if I don't make it out of this, you take this to our grandson. And I'm like, please stop saying that. I'm not going to make it through this movie. And then, yeah, that's when the little kid runs off to go to the bathroom. And you're just like, maybe we'll
get
lucky.
Oh my god. When he was in the bathroom and you see all the toilet seats and the urinals, and I'm like, you're pretty much standing in piss, like,
yeah, bro,
that was nasty.
That's
to
rough for you.
Please get out of there.
Please go. Excuse me, sir, I just want to say no. Please stop saying thanks.
No, just shush stop. You were so mean to poor Robin. I mean, he did really like help them out a lot. Like he was very useful, like even more than Eccles, because Eccles was like, I don't go below deck, so I don't really know exactly where everything is. Although I feel like if you work on the ship, you ought to know where everything is.
Yeah, you know where stuff is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know generally, but like you don't like...
But he's a waiter, though, I think.
Yeah, he works in the coat room.
Yeah, he wouldn't necessarily know like where the fucking boiler room is.
I guess.
He's the guy you hand your coat to and he gives you a ticket. That's it. That's his job.
He pours you champagne. He doesn't know much else beyond that.
Yeah, but once we get to the swimming part of the movie, like, this really becomes Belle's time to shine, and I was really happy that they gave her...
She's like, you all have been calling me a fat ass this whole movie, and I'll have you know, I can hold my breath for 7 minutes.
Right.
And I'm a swimming savant, and fucking Manny, her husband, is like, honey, you were 17 when you did that. You're somebody's grandma now. Like, I don't know if this is gonna work.
Doesn't matter. She was the underwater swimming champ of New York 3 years in a row, and she goes, bitch. I'm the only one trained to do this. And I'm like, yeah, if you're trained, then you should.
And then
go.
Our hero, you know, the guy who thinks he's literal god, gets stuck under like a beam or something, and then she has to go in and save his ass.
Can we just talk about that fucking swan dive that she does side? She just, like, she gives everything to Manny, and Manny's like, you go, girl. Like, I know you can do
be
this.
Careful. Don't die.
Yeah. And then she just goes, and I don't know how she got that
she
air.
She literally, like, whoop, boop.
Yeah, but like, did a swan dive directly she into the water. Thing. It was chef's kiss. I was like, hell yeah.
If I was an actor in this movie, I would be terrified to do all that underwater stuff. I'd be scared shitless.
I would be afraid I'd drown. But Shelley Winters was a swimmer in real life. Shelley Winters was a swimmer in real life, and she trained with an Olympic swim coach, so her character would be more believable, and that's acting, baby.
Bitch.
Well, I do wonder, like,
I love her.
The underwater swim of New York, the champion of underwater swim of New
York.
Don't
you question her medals.
We'll take no bell slander here.
I want to know how long that award lasted in New York.
Don't question her resume.
Is that an award that still goes on in New York? Underwater swim champ of New York 2024. Jesus. Here you go.
No, it was 3 years running.
That's not for me to know. That's for someone else to look up, but that's on them.
Doesn't matter. The medal still stands.
Yeah, she still can hold her breath for 2 minutes and 47 seconds.
Whatever the fuck she is in this movie. Oh, man.
But yeah, I love that she saves Reverend Scott and then immediately has a fucking heart attack. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, no.
Like, the thing is, and watching it again last night, like, they do this thing where she dies. When she does have her heart attack, they play it very, like, almost soap opera-y, where it's like, and, you know, she, like, keels over very dramatically with, like, the noises and shit, and the Reverend's, like, holding her in his arms at one point, and she's just, like, trying to talk, and, you know, she's
got you can hear, like, a croak in her chest of it, like, actually, I think her heart exploded.
And it's, like, it's melodramatic, but because you are so in love with this character, you don't really care about that. You're just like, no, don't die. This is where I start sobbing. And then Ernest, because they don't know what's going on the other side. So Ernest Borgnine goes under, and he comes up, and he's like, oh, thanks, Mrs. Rosen, you saved the day. And then it's like, no, dude, she's fucking dead. And he's like, what do I tell her husband? Her husband's back there, and Hackman's like, you don't tell him anything. And it's like,
I mean, truth, like, fuck. Honestly, that's really fucking hard, but like, don't, like,
what the
and
fuck?
I think the way that Rogo handled it, it's like, he's like,
he tried. I mean, he's like, she got through,
she saved the
she
Reverend,
saved us,
she
man.
Saved, yeah,
but then Nani, oh my god, Nani,
oh my god, yeah, they Manny goes in after her, and then Nani's like, something did go wrong, didn't it? I'm like, wow, honey, you're really good at picking up context clues.
your perception is amazing.
It's like, so then everyone's swimming through, right? And then Nani also, she's at the end with fucking Red Buttons. And she now, at this point, after everyone has been swimming, she then decides to go, I can't swim. And it's like, honey, you're now saying that we gotta go.
Yeah.
And Red Buttons is like, well, you're not really swimming. You're just holding your breath and, like, dragging on the rope. Like, it's fine. Just hold on to me and I'll drag your ass. It's fine.
Yeah. The swimming part isn't the hard part. The hard part is holding your breath for, like, a minute.
3 minutes.
And trying
at least,
to get. Yeah. And the way that, like, you can see, like,
Martin, he's holding her mouth at the end, like don't open your mouth.
Yeah, I thought Nani was gonna drown, because I was like, oh, I have seen no on-screen, like, I have seen no on-screen drownings at this point, so I thought Nani was gonna drown, but she makes it.
Yeah, she made it by the skin of her teeth, that girl.
Yeah,
jeez.
But
meanwhile, Belle is dead. Like, how is that fair?
When Manny, how's like, surfaces and he looks over at her, and then he just, like, cries. Oh, my God.
I was dying. I was literally dying. I can't do this. It was
like
so
I said,
horrible.
I watched it this morning, and this was the first time I cried over it. I was like, wow.
And he's like, I'm not leaving. And I was like, damn. I don't think I would want to either, to be fair. I'm like,
I wouldn't,
I'm not going. Fuck this.
But he has to see their grandson.
Yeah, Gene Hackman has like a good moment with him where he's like, listen, she gave me this necklace for you to give to your grandson. And it's the Hebrew symbol for life. And he's like, you got to get up and you got to go.
Yeah, his grandson's going to get a chocolate factory soon.
Oh my God, Scott. We're going to come into a lot of money. Between the chocolate factory and whatever ship company this is that's going to set us up for life, we are in for a lot of moolah.
Wow.
Oh, man. Jeez.
I had to throw in one.
What a
way. It was really terrible.
Yeah, it was really terrible.
It was like, it just sucked.
Yeah. And I was really devastated.
Yeah. So then we're climbing and we're going towards this like hatch of sorts to get us into the hall, I think. And this is probably the weirdest death in the movie, I would say, because it seemingly comes out of nowhere.
Well, the thing about like this one is it feels almost like it becomes an afterthought because it's sandwiched between arguably the two biggest deaths of the movie.
Yes. Yeah. It did feel
so
weird.
So they're climbing and climbing, and there's another explosion, and Linda just falls off the... There's like a catwalk that they're all climbing on, and she just falls off
with the hands
into a fiery inferno because there's oil everywhere that's just on fire. And yep, she's dead, all right. They pan to her, and she's cooking.
Yeah, she's got flames coming off her.
Steaming.
And not the... She's hot. She's real hot.
No, she's actually burning.
On fire. She's not fire. And she's
the
on
only
fire.
Good thing about this scene is Ernest Borgnine's speech to Hackman, because he just blames him and like goes off, and it's like a powerful speech, but it just, like I said, seemingly comes out of nowhere, because you're just like, wait a minute, we just had like the most devastating thing happen like 2 minutes ago, and then there was like build up to it and shit, and then Linda just out of nowhere just falls. It's like, wah! And that's it. And it's just like, what? Wait, what? Wait, what happened?
Classic Linda, always having to one-up Belle. I mean,
yeah, like, really, bitch? Really? Okay.
Yeah. Also,
and
if you're a
like,
wife,
so close.
It's like, if you're a wife in this movie, you're dead.
I know. They kill off the two wives. I'm like, what is this about?
Yeah, what is this subliminal message you're trying to tell us?
What's the guy's name again that did this Neem? What's
Ronald
what
Neem?
What do you got against wives, Mr. Neem?
Yeah.
The same.
Has someone hurt you?
The same thing Spielberg and Lucas had against
Temple
of Doom. Temple
of Doom. Like, God. Yeah, this one was dark. We were both going through divorces, so we made Indy literally face the actual devil. Like, it's fine.
Oh God, but yeah, when Linda died, I was just kind of like, okay, like that was the thing that happened. But I did really like that Rogu had this like heartbreaking moment where he blames Reverend Scott. He's like, you killed her, and then on his last one, he's just his voice breaks, and you know, like he doesn't really like believe that. He's just trying to find
reason.
Yeah, it's sad. I know. Well, he and Grandpa Joe can join the
commiserate, yeah.
widowers club. Yeah. And then on top of all of that, we have the hot steam.
There's steam heat going on in here, kids. And not in the hot way.
Yeah. Not steam, literal steam.
So. And this is the scene that always, because I remember when we did Grand Budapest, and we were talking about, like, eventually doing this, and you were talking about the remake, and you said, oh, there was a death that, like, always stuck with me. And I was like, me too, in the original. And this one was the one that always stuck with me. So, and it's funny because before it happens, they foreshadow it pretty strongly, because they pan to this big red wheel.
Yeah.
And like the thing that opens the hatch. And I was like, as soon as I saw it, even last night, I was like, no, get away.
Triggered.
Because there's steam covering this thing that's supposed to open the hatch, this big red wheel. So this is where Gene Hackman has his Oscar moment that never came to be, where he starts yelling at God. He's like, we're not asking you for help, but why are you working against us? You know, oh, how many more sacrifices do you want? Da, da, da. So he jumps out onto the wheel and, like, you know, a regular old ninja warrior just starts turning the wheel with just his arm strength. And he's dangling over this, like, fiery inferno. And he's like, Rogo, get him through! And then, after he opens the hatch, he lets go and dies in a fiery inferno, sacrificing himself for the good of the rest of the crew. Just like Jesus himself, sacrificing himself. So...
Good God.
So that happened, and that death always stuck with me, even when I watched it as a kid.
Yeah.
That's like the main thing that I always remember from this movie, is his sacrifice. And then Rogo gets up off his ass.
After a nice little speech from Red Buttons.
Yes, Red Buttons even gets a moment too, which is nice.
Yeah.
He's like,
I'm
what are you going to do? Just sit there and crumble? It's like, oh.
Yeah.
You're a terrible cop.
You big old wussy. Get up. Yeah. I know your wife just died, but. Quit being such
like,
a baby.
Let's go. So then they get through and they go into the hull, and this is the moment. They start, you know, they hear noises up there, and they start banging on the hull because it's, don't you know, sir, it's just an inch thick. So shut up, Robin. We're gonna get rescued. So they bang on the hull, and eventually. These rescue people come and cut open the thing, and they're like, how many are you? Six. Is there any other survivors? Nope. You guys are it. Okay, come on, let's go.
And they just fly away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In their little helicopter. So literally, they're the only survivors, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy. Yeah, no. Like,
at one point, we didn't even talk about it, but there's another group of people that are just wandering around, but they're going in the other direction. And Gene Hackman's like, no, you're going the wrong way. The other side of the ship is underwater. And he's like, how do you know that? We're going to go this way. And then you find out, like, no, they died. They died,
too. It's really, like, just a chance of luck, really.
Yeah.
I mean, because he really didn't know for sure. He just knew, like, that's the area we should go because it's only 1 inch thick. And so we'll be more likely to be rescued on this side than that side. So, yeah, it was just really through circumstance, I think. But... one thing I wanted to mention, so you had said that Reverend Scott's death was the most traumatizing for you. And, okay, this, do you guys care if I share the info from the 2006 one, the one that traumatized
me? Oh, yeah, no, please.
Okay, so spoilers if you don't want to know what happened, just, like, skip ahead. But
I'm curious.
Mine is exactly the same, like, at the very end. So I think, like, Kurt Russell is supposed to be, like, the Reverend Scott character. I don't think he was a
Makes
reverend.
Sense.
But... Emmy Rossum is his daughter in that movie, and there's a scene where it's not quite as simple as in the 1972 one, because he basically has to swim underwater to do a thingamabob and like open the door basically to the outside of the ship. So he has to swim underwater to get it to the door to open, but it's a long way away. And so it's like, if you go, like, you're basically like committing suicide because you are going to drown to death. And so Kurt Russell is the one who goes and he gets the door open, but he drowns to death. And you see him suck in water and struggle and freak out. And that it still hurts me to see that to this day. So that's so interesting that like, both of the endings for us like were traumatic. Yeah
because I always remember that red wheel and then him just dropping into fire, and I'm like, like the first time we rewatched it for our show, I was like, that's the wheel. That's it. This is
I didn't quite understand because he just seemed like he fell in water, and I was like, why can he not like emerge from the water? But apparently, like, IMDb was like, well, he likely lost the ability to swim because his arms were fatigued and his hands were burned. And I guess maybe the water was on fire. So
his hands were burned from the steam on the thing.
Yeah.
And then he's turning that wheel like crazy. And then there's definitely fire down there somewhere. So it's like,
well, I assume he,
I don't know.
There's probably, I assume because he does fall into what is flame, that there's oil on top of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably... as he falls into the fire, like
burns the shit out of himself,
and he's probably
can't get
so
out.
Much pain that he just he's just gonna drown just because that's just kind of how it goes.
That's how it goes, you know.
That's how it goes
when that happens.
On the ship of dreams,
ship of dreams. This was the precursor to Titanic, I'm sure. I'm sure of it.
Well, it's funny because we did, I think we compared it to Titanic too, because like Titanic was the movie, obviously. I'm not like, you know, this is a movie. So because the Titanic was the first voyage and then that whole disaster obviously happened. And this one is the last voyage of the Poseidon. And then it had this whole disaster happen. So it is kind of interesting in that way too. And they're both like, they were both huge movies obviously when they came out.
Yeah. So really, weird, but new ship, old ship, it doesn't matter. You're still
just stay away.
Fucked.
Just fucking stay away.
Just shell out a couple of extra dollars for a plane ticket.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, that's what we're telling. The real
not,
lesson.
Not that planes, I mean, don't tell the people on Lost that, you know.
Everyone's fine on an airplane, right, guys? Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Planes never crash.
No. No.
This is where Claire tells us that this episode was sponsored by JetBlue.
Yeah.
Whoopsie daisies. Sorry, guys. But if you want to sponsor us, definitely reach out.
I mean, please.
Hee hee.
Oh, my God.
This did make me think. Remember that, like, crazy time when all the cruise ships were sinking and everyone was like, we shouldn't be going on cruise ships? Do y'all remember that? It was, like, pre-pandemic when it felt like at least once a year there was a cruise ship that was sinking.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah.
Or breaking down.
And then I definitely remember during pandemic people getting trapped on cruise ships for like, that sounds like a nightmare. That sounds like Triangle of Sadness. Have you ever seen Triangle of Sadness?
No, but I want to.
Oh my God. So bizarre.
Oh my God, that movie's crazy.
It's fucking bizarre, but it's like, great.
We had that friend who got trapped in Hawaii during the pandemic.
Oh, on a ship?
Yeah.
No, he
not on, but he couldn't leave.
Like, he went to Hawaii to visit, like, his sister.
I think a family member, and yeah, he got trapped there and couldn't leave. So he was just like, oh, it's a paradise. it's just like misery.
So,
like, I want
to
go.
So hard to be trapped on Hawaii. God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, I think it was really poetic that, like, this whole time, Reverend Scott's like, you have to save yourself. You have to, like, do everything yourself. God's not going to help you. And I think it's a really good tie-in back to when he was talking to that reverend, the reverend from the ballroom scene, because that reverend's like, I can't leave these people. Like, we're probably all going to die, but I can't leave them. I have to, like, be here for moral support. And Reverend Scott's like, can't relate. I'm leaving. But
bye.
But in this moment, Reverend Scott's finally like, if you're going to take another life, take mine. So, like, he's committing, like, the ultimate sacrifice in order to save these people. So I feel like that was it sucked because I don't want to see any of these characters die, but it felt, like, poetic for him to finally be like, I will make the sacrifice this time because Belle's done it, so I should do it too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny too because weirdly, like, when he's on the wheel and he's yelling at God, he's like, oh, you took Acres, you took Belle, and then referring to Linda, he goes, and now this girl. I'm like, yeah, you couldn't even say her name. This
she
girl
has a name.
Like, okay. But yeah, the ultimate sacrifice is the important part.
True.
But it's also, like, kind of what you said, where it's, like, it's just kind of pure luck that they got it right, that the engine room was passable and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, was that luck or was it, like, faith? Was it, like, God looking out? You know? You don't know. That's the real question, I guess. But it is interesting how they play with faith with his character throughout the movie.
Yeah, I like that a lot. They survived, but are they going to be okay? Who is to say? I think they've all are gonna have to go to therapy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
but they all get dragged back when they offer them free trips on the Poseidon 2.
Well, you know what? Because I didn't know until a couple years ago that they had made a sequel, and since then I have watched it, and it's terrible. It has nothing to do with like what actually happened in this movie. But what would be funny is like if like they could have done a sequel and just had another boat. Because obviously it made money, so they're going to want to do a sequel. So like, just have another boat, call it the Poseidon, have like one of them come back. You have like Ernest Borgnine come back. Be like, I'm just going to go on a ship.
Yeah.
Because why not? Fuck my life. I lost my wife. I have nothing left. And, like, you know, just have somebody come back, have Red Buttons come back, just somebody, and then have it happen again. And then I can just see the trailer now, freaking Ernest Borgnine, here we go again. And then yeah. It's another fucking
I've been through
disaster.
This before. The to the engine room.
I know what to do this time. But yeah. Not every successful movie needs a sequel, Hollywood.
But in the sequel, does the ship capsize again? Like,
it's literally, oh my god.
Okay.
The sequel is really more like a midquel.
It takes place during this movie.
Apparently, while the ship is capsized, these pirates come along, led by Michael Caine, and they break into the ship. Your face is hilarious. They break into the ship to steal gold. There's gold on the ship and, like, plutonium, apparently, because we're going back in time. Marty, and I don't know, it was so weird, and I didn't even know it existed till a couple years ago, and then I finally found it, because it's nowhere, you can never find it. I found, like, a rip of it somewhere, and I watched it, and Sally Field's in it too, and you're like, why does this exist? Why is this in existence
again? A stacked, it's like, cast,
literally insane. I don't get it, but whatever. It made no money and no one knows it, so it's fine. No wow. one talks about this either, which is
but
insane.
I like very curious to go back and watch this.
I was too. I watched it, and it was a thing that existed, but it
it's
wasn't like good.
But just like with deep sea TikTok, that audio is also used when boats have to prepare for pirates. So it all comes back to deep sea TikTok.
Deep sea TikTok, pirates, plutonium, gold. Perfect. We got ourselves a sequel.
Beautiful combination. Yeah, we could write an amazing sequel based off of this premise alone.
So crazy.
Well, is there anything else about the Poseidon Adventure that we want to talk about before we go to the segments?
I think we pretty much covered everything.
I think we did.
Yeah. Oh, there was the song. The Oscar-winning song we didn't talk about.
Yeah.
Oscar winning song.
I was hoping we were going to avoid that.
The morning after. Oh, no, but I know you hate it, so I know we have to talk about it. So there's Nani is like a performer on the ship, and she sings this song called The Morning After. And it's slow, and it's boring, and it's bad. But it won an Oscar. So I guess because they couldn't give this movie any other Oscars. I think it won two. Won very few. It was nominated for like 8, and it won like a couple. But one of them was song, and I don't know why, but it exists. They do it. They perform it twice in the movie. I don't know why.
Yeah, I was very confused when I learned that this was not only nominated but won the Oscar, because when they are practicing it, there's that waiter who mocks it, and he's like, "The morning after," and I was like, relatable.
And it's like, let's give it the relatable Oscar. It must have been Slim Pickens that year for a song, I don't know, but it was just so funny.
Yeah,
and Nani's the one singing it, like, it just, oh god.
Did you like my song?
Yeah, it was great, sweetie. Okay, let's go, we're dying, literally, like let's go.
But if you, like, read the lyrics, because I was listening to it on my third watch, and I was like, this seems, like, pretty foreshadowing to what's happening.
Yeah, it's grim, for sure. It's like, well, there will be a morning after if we can get through the night or something like that.
Yeah.
It's like,
we have a chance to find the light. Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I see what they were doing, but Oscar worthy? Me thinks not.
Me thinks not.
But also, they're going to a jazz festival.
Oh, yeah, they do say that. There are a bunch of hippies going to a jazz festival for some reason.
And they play this song, and, like, this is, like, the farthest thing from jazz.
It's literally, like, you know, ethereal, like, it's got to be a more. Like, it's so, it's like, you're literally, your grandma is singing it in the nursing home. Like, it's so bad.
I'll say, it's no Old Lang Syne, you know? It's no Old Lang Syne.
I mean, when they do sing Auld Lang Syne, also, like, that's pretty unhinged. Oh my God. I've never seen a bunch of older people get so jazzed over Auld Lang Syne.
The way that they are, like, just rocking back and forth and it's like bumping wild. Into each other. I was like, I've never seen this before.
And like, it's also like we said earlier, they're like all just kissing each other on the mouth. Like they don't know each other and they're just like macking on each other and swinging around singing Auld Lang Syne. Like there's a lot of liquor on this boat, clearly.
Yeah, I think they're all totally, well, there's another, first of all, yes, they're all totally wasted, but I think that there's another thing with the passage of time in this film. I'm so like confused how long it's actually taking because it feels like it's only like maybe a few hours that it takes them to get through the boat, but by the time they get to the, you know, hull at the end, it's like daylight. And so it feels like time is this didn't take that long for them to, they only had the lights for 3 hours. That's what Echo said, the lights will be for 3 hours. But it's midnight, and then now it's bright, sunshiny day outside.
Now it's day.
Well, it was midnight on, like, the East Coast, let's say. So maybe it's like...
It was dark outside.
Midnight is still dark outside. It does not matter where you are on the Earth.
Nice try there, Scott.
I'm trying.
Don't try to make sense of this movie.
So this feels like a great time to ask more Deflix, because... I have a few. One being, why Deflick didn't they fly? Again, everything
why
could have been avoided.
Why didn't these people fly?
Because they weren't sponsored by JetBlue.
Because also, like, they're going to, even the Rosens, they're going to Israel, I think, to visit their grandchild. And the boat goes to Italy. So it's like, why are we taking... Like, why are we going here to then, like, what are we, how do we get here? Like, why are we doing this? Take a plane. Is Miss Rosen afraid to fly?
She might.
Well, get over it.
Get over it. Nothing bad ever happens on a plane.
Also, the kids, it's like, their parents are supposedly on vacation in Greece while the kids are traveling to Italy to meet them, possibly, but it's like, why are you on vacation without your kids and sending them on a random boat by themselves? Like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, I don't understand why the parents are gone. The beginning, like, text on the screen said that they were going from New York to Athens, which, like, would have made sense for, like, them meeting them up in Greece, but also, again, why are your kids not there to begin with?
Oh, no, you're right. They were going to... The boat's going to Greece. The Rogos are going to Italy.
Yes, the Rogos are going.
So also, just get a fucking plane, dude.
Yeah, you're not even going to Athens.
It's so weird.
But I do want to know, where the fuck can I get Susan's removable dress skirt and the cute shorts underneath?
Oh, my God. Yeah, that, it just comes right
off.
He
was like, you can't go in that skirt. And then she's like, okay. Boop. She takes it off. And I was like, I didn't even know
that
was a thing.
Yeah, I absolutely want that.
Can we please bring back removable dress skirts and cute shorts underneath? Because that was adorable. Yeah.
Like a nice skirt, but you can take the skirt off completely. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. I'd rather that than just run around a like broken down ship amongst a bunch of strangers in my husband's dress shirt and tidy whities. Like, I'd much rather have fashionable shorts and like clog heels.
I don't know why she just didn't take pants off a dead body. Like,
that's a little more. I don't know if Susan could have handled doing that, but maybe Linda would have. Linda's for pretty.
Oh, wait. I thought we were talking about Linda. My bad.
No, Linda. Linda's the one with the underwear. Susan's the one that takes off the skirt, but she has shorts underneath, so she's fine.
Well, there was no one her size wearing pants.
Oh, yes. Everyone else is a bunch of fat asses.
Also, you know, a suit. Like, a lot of the dead people are either wearing dresses or like suit pants. I'm sure there's not like.
I'd rather wear pants though.
Yeah, but like she's,
underwear.
She's a slender woman. Like most guys are bigger than.
Like she's a she doesn't care. She's a woman of the night.
You could have at least like tied a jacket around her waist, you know, cover up a little bit.
But then we
wouldn't
get the nice leg shots throughout the movie, which is really why we did that.
Really, you know, need that ass shot.
There's a reason
shot.
We didn't have Mrs. Rosen take off her skirt.
Mm-hmm. All right, any deflicks from you guys?
Like, why deflicted all the people who worked on the ship so vehemently were like, hey, this is the right thing to do.
Right.
Yeah, why the flick didn't the, I thought it would have been funny, not funny, but, like, fucked up if, like, the representative guy came back, the one that told Leslie Nielsen, you gotta keep going, because, you know, money. It would have been cool if he came back and, like, all the passengers got to yell at him for being such a selfish piece of shit. That would have been nice, because that seemed like there was a comeuppance that was unresolved there.
Well, he's the first to die.
Well, yeah. It would have been nice. He could have been hiding out somewhere.
Yeah, they could have found him, and then he could have had a really, like, violent death. More violent than water bursting through the cabin. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Justice.
Oh, God, did you guys hear about the gator on 4-3?
With the plutonium and the gold?
Not the plutonium-ridden, gold-plated gator.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's a good why the flick. Why the flick did they make a sequel to this that's not actually a sequel? It's just a weird mid bullet starring Michael Caine and Sally Field. Poor Sally Field. I think this was before she was like Sally Field, you know?
Oh, really? Huh.
I think so. It was early. It must have been like early 70s. So maybe like Smokey and the Bandit days.
Wasn't this around the Flying Nun time? Isn't she the Flying Nun?
Yeah, it must have been around that time.
But oh god, Michael Caine needs to stay away from sequels of movies involving water things.
Oh yeah,
oh Jaws. I was like, wait, Jaws. What else are you referring to? Well, he had the B disaster movie too. He should just stay away from disaster movies in general.
You agree. All right, well, Dick of the Flick. I think there's quite a few in here. I have Lenarcos in here. I mean, I think he is the Dick of the Flick because even though, like, I think the ship was fucked either way, he made them run full ahead. Well, although, I don't know, maybe he did screw them over because he made them run full ahead, and if they had been going slower, maybe the Rogue Wave would have gone past them and missed
it. Yeah, would have missed it, possibly, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's like the dick, but the problem is he dies pretty quickly, so you can't really focus a lot of your ire on him. I would say the, I don't know, the dick of the movie that you can hate, I mean, not hate, but, I mean, Rogo's kind of painted as a dick a lot because he fights with Gene Hackman, but Gene Hackman also acts like a dick sometimes.
Yeah. They both, so, I think,
and sometimes
are.
That's the price you have to pay for being the leader. You have to act like a dick sometimes to get everybody together and keep everybody alive.
Well, also, Rogu's a 60s, 70s cop, you know?
From New York.
From New York.
Naturally.
His job probably has to be dick.
Yeah.
And then let's just go and throw Robin in there.
Yeah, Robin. Robin.
Let's throw Robin in there because he called Shelley Winters a swordfish.
For no reason. A 600-pound
swordfish. 600-pound swordfish.
Well, then we should also throw Linda in there.
Yes,
because
that's
she
fair.
Said, I don't want to get stuck behind fat ass in this
fat
too.
Fat ass.
Well, so. not only that, she when she goes to the pipe, she goes in, she's like, oh, I'm going before fat ass just in case she gets stuck. And before the children. She goes before the kids too.
Does she?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's fucked too, yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck those kids.
Well, I think she did it because she was last to go up the stairs, and then she was like,
so she's like,
running.
I'm not getting stuck last again.
Yeah. So, I don't know. There's quite a few. Ultimately, like, for me, I think it's Lenarcos, because none of this might have happened if he hadn't been such a dick about getting there so fast and on time.
We must be there by Monday.
We're costing money.
Yeah. Anyone who threatens Leslie Nielsen is a dick of the flick.
It also begs the question, like, what were you going to do? Like, you were going to take away his captainship or whatever, but, like, what were you going to do? Kick him off the boat? Like,
well,
he's going to stay on the boat.
Well, yeah.
And you would assume his crew has loyalty to him, whether he's officially captain or not. So it's like, that would have just pissed him off, probably.
Yeah, I would have loved if he was like, okay, I'll step down. And then everyone else who had their master's license or whatever was like, we stand with our captain. Oh, captain, my captain.
Yes,
and
captain, my captain.
Mutiny on the ship. They tossed Lenarcos overboard. And They go on their merry way. That's the sequel I wanted.
They all make it to Athens.
Athens, and they get extradited to
the States for murder.
And they all pull out student desks and stand on top of them.
Oh, yeah. So, Captain, my Captain.
Yes. I love that. All right. So, our last segment is how many flicks do we give? I did write down the awards that this movie won. So, we already talked about the Oscars for Best Original Song, questionable,
oh boy,
to say the least. But it also won Special Technical Achievement, which I think was well-deserved for, like, the practical effects that everyone contributed to this movie. Shelley Winters was nominated for Best Actress at the Oscars. She didn't win, but she did win a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress. So at least she won something. And then also Gene Hackman won a BAFTA for Best Actor. So he got his little time to shine, too. Right. Yeah.
Cool.
And then in terms of how this movie was received critically, we've already talked about it. People really, really liked it at the time. Ultimately, it has an IMDb rating of 7.1 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes, it has 80% from critics and 76% from audiences. So definitely fresh from both sides. Critics really liked it, which is surprising for a disaster movie because I feel like critics don't like those. Audiences like those more. But I think there's a lot to critically enjoy about this movie as well. So yeah, out of 5 flicks, what do you guys give The Poseidon Adventure?
I give it a good old 4 out of 5 flicks. I very much enjoy it. It's very rewatchable. I've rewatched it many times and still gotten a kick out of it every time. So, yeah. Solid movie. I'm glad we were able to take you back in time on this one.
Yeah, I also give it a 4 out of 5 flicks. I think all the characters are really great.
Except Robin.
Robin's still terrible.
Robin's a pain in the ass.
Robin's terrible, and Nani's not much better. But besides those two, every other character's very good and very well done, well acted, to the point where you're like, I wouldn't mind if there were a prequel to the Rogues and
the Rogues.
Rogo.
And the Rosens and their hardware Rosen. Store.
Rogo. There's a lot of R's. Reverend. Yeah. Rogo, Rosen,
Robin,
Ragu,
Eden Ragu.
it's a good movie. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend going to watch it.
Indeed.
Oh yeah, I highly recommend watching this movie. Don't let the 1972 stigma turn you away because this movie is cinema. I'm gonna give this a 4.3 out of 5. I feel like I had a fucking blast watching this movie. It was so fun. It felt like just so cool to like see how they were going to make a disaster movie with practical effects and make it look believable. And I mean, they did the thing. They really did. And not to sacrifice like any of the character development as well. Not everyone like had the same amount of character development, which I think is hard to do with a big cast. The most important people like got their development, like Belle and Reverend Scott, and you know, I mean, that seems about it. And Rogu to some extent too, as well.
And like that's the thing that we were kind of saying earlier. Like that's what's missing from like maybe more modern ones. They give some development, but it's very cookie cutter, like surface level development, and just enough to get you through the movie. But not really to care very much about the characters. This one, you care about the characters, which is why when certain people die, it sticks with you, you know, for quite a while afterwards.
Yeah, I think disaster movies now are more focused on the disaster than on the character because it's like, oh my god, this crazy storm or thing that's happening. Look how crazy it looks. And that's great. Like, that's entertaining. But also don't lose the character development story that's also happening here. Because we need to, like, care about the characters. Otherwise, what's the point, you know?
Yeah.
In that case, I'm rooting for the disaster.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, fun watch. Really liked it. Thank you guys for introducing me to this movie. This is definitely in like my top disaster films now.
Yay.
There we go.
Woo.
Excited.
Well, Frankie and Scott, thank you so much for coming on this episode. I want to give you guys a chance to plug your podcast. Anything else you'd like to share? The floor is yours.
Yes. So Scotty and I, if you haven't been able to tell by our bickering, we are a married couple and we show each other different movies pretty much every week on our podcast called Shoot the Flick. It is available wherever pods are casted. Right now, because this is coming out beginning of April, so right now we're getting ready to kick off a bit of a Rocky series, because in our past seasons we've watched some of the Rocky movies and I got tired of spreading them out, so we're just gonna bang out like 3 Rocky movies in a row. So pray for me.
I will.
But yeah, please come check us out. Check out our husbandly and wifely bickering over on Shoot the Flick.
Awesome. Yeah, and I'll definitely make sure to link to your podcast, link to your socials, so everyone can find you guys very easily. Love listening to you all. I loved listening to your mummy episode recently, because such a classic, and it was very interesting to hear your take on it, because you hadn't watched it before, had you?
I had never seen it, so yeah. I obviously know what it is, but I had never actually sat down and watched it. So it was definitely an interesting experience.
She doesn't enjoy it like I enjoy it.
No, but that's okay. You didn't enjoy Spice World like I enjoyed Spice World. But that's okay.
Yeah, you don't have to like the same things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's basically what we do on our show. We just kind of talk about our differences in opinion on certain movies. So it's fun.
Definitely.
But yeah, we'll definitely have to have you come back. We just did Grand Budapest with you, so we'll have to have you come back. Maybe we'll get you off the Wes Anderson train a little bit, do something else. We'll shake it up next time.
Always happy to come on your podcast. And yeah, everyone, please go check out Shoot the Flick. They're awesome to listen to.
Also go listen to our Palm Springs episode. That was a lot of fun too.
Oh, yeah, that was really fun.
From last season. Yeah, Palm Springs. That was such a good one. Again, a rom-com. It all comes back to the rom-com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie and Palm Springs, same thing.
Yeah, same league. Cool. So for our next flick, as you would imagine, we are continuing our Mother Nature is a Motherfucker Month series with our second installment. And I may have slightly given it away at the end of last episode because I talked about how I live in the Midwest, and in the Midwest there are a lot of tornadoes around us, and
oh boy,
you know, you just learn how to survive. You learn how to survive those tornadoes, and the movie that helped me learn how to survive a tornado was Twister.
Oh boy.
It's gonna be interesting.
I'm super excited. We will be talking about the sequel coming up, and
I'm gonna have to rewatch Twister now, which is insane. I haven't watched Twister in like 100 years,
but it's such a fun time. Such
I'm
a fun
have
time.
To rewatch it now.
I'm very excited, and yeah, like the Poseidon Adventure, we started in the ocean, and now with Twister, we're going to the skies. The skies are also scary. Again,
everything is scary.
Everything in
that's
the world
is
scary.
That's what disaster movies teach you.
You can't
escape
anything.
The week afterwards is an earthquake.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just go all over.
Yeah, yeah. A hurricane, asteroid. Everything is trying to kill us at all times.
Pretty
so,
much.
And then you go to like frogs with
no.
Oh god, yeah, do frogs.
No, don't
bees.
Look that up, guys.
Okay,
there are bees.
Look it up. Don't look up the swarm. Don't look up frogs. Don't do it.
Don't Google anything. Just live in your house.
Never Google anything in your life.
Get off your computer now. Just stop.
Yeah.
Just go live in a cabin somewhere. Preferably,
don't go outside.
Yeah. Just stay in there.
But yeah, so next episode will be Twister. So definitely make sure everyone to go watch that. And I am going to be joined by Clarissa and Courtney from 30 Dirty and Dying to talk about the biggest millennial movie. Maybe not biggest, but definitely it is a millennial movie for sure. It is, yeah, definitely up there. But that brings us to the end of Poseidon Adventure and our episode today. If you like listening, please make sure to subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, leave a review, tell your friends, all of that good stuff. And then you can also follow Why the Flick at Why the Flick on social. We are on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Letterboxd. We are now, I think, like less than 30 people away from 1,000 followers on TikTok. So we'd love to get to that 1,000 mark before they ban TikTok, just right before they do it, you know. So definitely please check us out on our social and all of that good stuff. But yeah, Frankie and Scott, thanks again for coming on and talking about Poseidon Adventure. Always happy to have you guys on anytime.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.